On this edition of the program, handling conflict with your teen, common mistakes parents make in conflict, and how the gospel speaks to all of this. It's all coming up. From Southwest Saskatchewan, I'm Paul.
I'm Brad.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Dallas.
And this is the Rock Solid Roundtable, a podcast to help grow strong families and help families in crisis recover. So, gentlemen, today, conflict, strife, discord. We have all the answers, right? One silver bullet that'll solve all the problems for the families that are listening, right?
Oh, yeah. You know it, Paul.
Yeah.
We're just such perfect people.
Yeah, maybe not quite. There's no easy answers, no quick fixes. It's the reality that, I mean, what works for one family isn't necessarily going to work for all families, right? For another one.
I'm also just picturing our wives and children kind of rolling their eyes when they heard
that. That is a little bit the male approach, right? Where it's like, no, I got this. Stand aside, I got this. Absolutely. You can do all the things that we recommend here. And there's a chance that it still might not resolve the conflict, right? So let's start off with what are we talking about here when we say conflict? What do we mean by this word? Are we talking physical, emotional, verbal?
Well, I think, to be quite honest, we're not going to have a home that doesn't have some level of conflict. And even as we go through this podcast, we're going to acknowledge that there's healthy conflict. In other words, it's just necessary. Well, we're different people and we see the world through a different lens than one another. And that just needs to be worked out. But there's also unhealthy conflict. And yeah, it can be as disturbing as physical and violent and those kind of things. We just want to be both honest and realistic, but also address some of the more crisis-based conflict that is going to be seen as well.
Okay. So why don't we talk about the idea of healthy and unhealthy conflict, if that works. What do we mean when we say that? Like, what is unhealthy conflict and what is healthy conflict? Dan, do you want to?
Sure. People sometimes treat conflict as something that has to be managed, or something that has to be hidden, or something that, it's just terrible to have it. But I believe that conflict is intrinsic to the fact that God has created us moral and relational beings. By moral, I mean we look at something and, it's in our DNA to say, this is good or this is bad. Or sometimes I'm not sure. But we are still trying to evaluate it morally. God has also made us relational. And, we simply are not designed to be alone. Now, if we are going to be in relationship, the old joke, I have never had any conflict because I live on a desert island somewhere. If we are going to be in relationship, there is going to be conflict. So it's important not to see it as something bad or something that has to be kind of somehow managed and gotten rid of, but as something that's intrinsic to how God has created us. And if that's the case, why did God create us? Again, to me, this is, we begin with the chief end of all human beings is to glorify God and to enjoy Him forever. So what does conflict play in that? I think it's important to begin there before we'll be able to define what's healthy and unhealthy conflict. So what does conflict have to do with them being created to glorify God and enjoy Him forever?
That's a really good question. I mean, just even to wrestle with, there's good and bad in this world, right? And It does bring God glory when we're faced with circumstances of good and bad, and to choose the good and follow God into that, even though sometimes the bad is certainly more enticing, right? And Satan uses those vices to twist us and pull us towards that, but to make that moral decision and choose, no, I need to choose to do this and follow God, I think brings Him a great amount of glory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And God Himself looks at what He's made and He says, this is good. Now, in our case, of course, not everything we encounter or do is good. But it's in our DNA to look at things and say, this is good and this is bad. And that's going to be at the root of so much of the conflict we experience.
And I think we would love to assume that if we're on the right side of things, we're doing the right thing, then that will eliminate conflict. But in fact, it could actually be what stirs up conflict. Yeah. We're sometimes taught to just go along to get along.
Especially as Canadians, I think.
Yeah, especially as Canadians. So, yeah, if you're a good Canadian, you go along to get along. Don't make any waves. Don't rock the boat. And so when you dig your heels in a little bit and go, wait a minute, I don't think that's right. I think this is right, especially when we are really clear about Dan's statements and questions about glorifying God. That's going to be in conflict with a lot of the world's systems that are outside of God's created order, how he's designed things to be. So I think being honest that we can expect a level of conflict. And I think that leans us towards what we're going to talk about, even in regards to conflict in our own homes as well.
Great. So let's get down into sort of the nitty gritty of it then, into the actual homes themselves. What are some of the common conflicts or fights that teens and parents tend to have?
So I'll take a kick at this one a little bit. When I think about the teen years and the relationship that teens have in their homes with their parents, or even with adults in general, in a sense. Now, I've been my wife and I have been doing youth ministry, youth work for a long time, actually, longer than our oldest kid, even, which is, you know, we've been doing this over 30 years now. And so we've been blessed to interact with young people in lots of different settings. And one of the things that is observable is that the teenage years are a time of great transition. And so the teenage brain is actually going through a major shift in how it processes the world and their experiences in the world. And so through the child years, a lot of things are often very black and white. They just are able to see the world through that black and white lens. And that's normal and that's natural for a child. But in the teen years, they're now going to go through a time and a process of evaluating everything much more through a subjective lens and trying to interpret their experiences, interpret the world that's around them. And so in the process of that, I think there's two really big common conflict areas that are at maybe the root of the other conflicts that will happen. And I think they're these two things. Who will be their primary influence or influence group? I think that's a really big one for young people, for teenagers. And the other one is they're on a journey towards independence from their parents, but they're not yet ready for all the adult responsibilities. They want to decide for themselves what they want to do and what is best for them. So back to that first one, who will be their primary influence or influence group? Teenagers are notorious for being what is sometimes known as peer-oriented or having a strong attachment to peers. So there's a really good book, a really good resource called Hold On to Your Kids by Gordon Neufeld and Gabor Maté called Hold On to Your Kids, Why Parents Need to Matter More Than Peers. And in that book, they discuss very thoroughly this common reality of peer attachment for teenagers. And so as the teenagers struggle for independence from their parents, they can become very oriented and attached to these peer relationships over and above the relationship with their parents. It's often very hurtful to the parents even because they're the ones who have invested all these years, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 years into this young person. I changed your diapers. And for a mom, I brought you into this world. And sometimes want to say I could take you out too, but that's another story. But the reality is that that is actually at the root of sometimes why it's so hurtful during this time is because parents will often feel rejected, whether that's real or perceived, But there is a sense in which they're struggling towards independence. And yet it is actually very critical who their primary influence or influence group is. And so parents want to navigate that by maintaining as much influence in their life as possible, but also maintaining them being in good influence groups as well. And so when we see young people shift their influence group, that's a really important sign to take note of.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to realize that this is a perfectly natural and normal part of human development as well, right? Like when we are small children, we primarily understand ourselves as the member of the family that we are in, right? My kids think of themselves as members of this family, not necessarily, you know, participants in, you know, the local scene or the national or, you know, the world stage or anything like that, right? And as they grow, they begin to see, like, they're trying to figure out, who am I besides a member of this family, right? Because they're not going to be in your household the entire time. So this differentiation is actually a very critical part of growing up.
Absolutely. And that also then leans towards kind of that second factor of they're struggling for that independence. And yeah, like you said, Paul, there's a question of even their identity that's a part of this, right? They've known themselves to be a part of that, the core family group that they, their family of origin. But who am I independent or apart from them? And so they're struggling to figure that out. And so often there's a great desire for having autonomy to make decisions for themselves. One of the exercises that I've often done here with some of our students is to just ask them, what are their top five values? And so this one student that we had here a number of years ago, we were talking and he kind of gave me his list of top five values. And actually it was pretty good. You know, it was family and friends and money and God. It was in the list there somewhere, I think too. And the list wasn't a bad list in one sense. And I said, you know, I think that your top value is something other than what you've mentioned. I said, would you mind me sharing that with you? He's like, no, that's okay. I said, I think your top value is autonomy. You want to be able to determine for yourself what you get to do. Do you think I'm right about that? And he acknowledged that that I was probably right about that. And so one of the things that's so important for us to mentor our young people in and towards is that, yeah, you know what? You are moving towards being an adult, being independent of your parents and having, but that independence comes with responsibilities. And so shaping them and mentoring them towards that independence is a really important part of their development. But with the acknowledgement and the responsibilities that come with those more responsible choices.
You used the phrase shepherd them in this, and I think that's actually a very critical idea. Do you want to expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I probably lean into words like that because I did pastoral work for a number of years, and I really do see young people needing to be shepherded. So if you think about what that word actually means in its original context with sheep, sheep need boundaries. They need the opportunity to grow and develop towards their maturity with protection and with guidance. And it's pretty well known that sheep go astray. And so our young people, they're going to test the waters. It's more common for young people to test the waters in ways that their parents are not comfortable with than for them not to. You might be lucky and have that child that doesn't test the waters much at all. But if you're listening to this podcast, that's probably not you. Or at least you've got one that's testing the waters pretty good. And so they need a great deal of both care. So a shepherd gives a great deal of care. And in fact, in a biblical description of that, it even talks about how shepherds would lay down their lives for their sheep per se, where they become the protection between them and what might ultimately harm them. But it also, the shepherd doesn't keep all harm from them. There is some lessons that need to be learned through even some painful experiences. And so it's not about shielding our kids or even our teenagers from all discomfort or difficulty. Those are actually some of the most important learning experiences that our young people need.
So I think there's a very natural inclination when we experience conflict, especially with our children, to say like, you know, I must have done something wrong either mm-hmm. just now or kind of in the lead up to this. So does conflict kind of come from or signify a lack of relationship?
No, I don't think conflict is necessarily a sign of lack of relationship. I think, well, like Dan was saying, you know, it's really at the basis of who we are, dealing with right or wrong choices. Like you were saying, Dupal, you know, it's kind of natural. They're trying to discover who they are outside of kind of a family, right? You're never going to be in any relationship where there's not going to be some sort of conflict at one point. The analogy you use, well, if you don't want conflict, you know, go live on an island in the middle of nowhere, and that's the only way. And then you'll just fight with yourself and have conflict with yourself there too anyways, right? So I don't think conflict is a sign of a lack of relationship. In fact, I think it's a super important part of relationship when a group of people or two people can sit down and have actually a discussion and a disagreement. The greatest friendships that I have, like the friendships that I consider to be just the closest and greatest that I have with some friends of mine, those are we'll sit down and argue for 2 hours about something. Like we disagree and we'll end the conversation in disagreement, but we were able to just kind of sit down and actually disagree with one another. And that's actually, to me, a great sign of a relationship, that we don't hold things against one another, even though we're in disagreement. And it's a little different when it's your children in some senses. But I mean, especially when we're working with teens, sometimes there is a, hey, look, son, daughter, child, I know that we disagree on this point. And we might just set a boundary and say, I do actually understand where you're coming from though. So I'm not meaning to actually just, you know, be lord over you and exert my authority, but you know, we can sit down with our children and actually have conflict and discuss it and end the conversation in relationship, even if it ends in disagreement. I think that would be a sign of really healthy relationship if we can do that with our kids.
And where does that health come from? That to me is crucial. I want to push the shepherd analogy a little bit. To me, it seems that what's crucial for sheep is to be able to recognize their shepherd's voice. Jesus, my sheep know my voice. My own know me. So going back again to our created purpose being to glorify God, essential to that is being able to listen to him. Hmm. And our children are entrusted to us so that we can model for them, teach them how to listen to the most important voice in their life. That doesn't mean that that's going to be smooth sailing. After all, we look at the Garden of Eden, perfect parent, perfect environment, and yet those children did not listen, and there was conflict. But our role is to try to shape that in our children, right from all through the time that our paths lie with theirs. And yes, it's different when they are in our care. That starts to shift, exactly as Dallas was explaining, as they grow and as you were saying, Paul, they are looking to form their own identity. But if our focus is on, first of all, modeling to them that we ourselves are in every situation listening for that most important voice, that then becomes the way I think that we start to work with inevitable conflict. So we are reaching towards the ideal kind of resolution, like in Acts 15, when and this is a family of a different kind, it's a family of adults. But here they are disagreeing on something very fundamental. And then there comes an amazing moment when, after butting heads, they say, it seemed good to the Holy Spirit and to us. There has been conflict, but they've come to some resolution.
Yeah, it certainly seems like an inevitable part of human relationships, at least, that there is going to be conflict, that there's going to be strife. You know, you think about essentially the first relationship, right? Speaking of like the Trinity, right? The Word was with God in the beginning, all of this sort of stuff. There's no conflict between them, right? Because there is perfect agreement, mm-hmm. Which we do not experience ourselves. But through conflict, we can experience growth, right? And you see that a lot in the Psalms, even with, you know, the psalmists wrestling with God and saying, like, why are you doing this? I don't understand what's going on, right? And like, will you save me? But always coming back at the end and saying, you know, essentially, like, I will trust you even if I don't understand what's going on.
Well, we even see that Jesus on the cross, right? My God, why have you forsaken me? But in the end, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. This both, this cry out of why, God, like, why have you forsaken me? But also just full submission to God.
Interesting. So there's almost your conflict within the Trinity happened on the cross, right? Where God turned away in order that we might be saved. Let's try to narrow back into families and households.
Yeah.
Maybe Dan, what are some mistakes that parents make when dealing with conflict with their children?
So again, I'd root it in failures to listen. When we fail to make that the focus, one of the big causes of conflict that I've observed is parental insecurities. Our own insecurities surface, and then we make it a matter of either controlling or silencing. We think, you know, how can this kid not think the way I'm thinking? How can this kid not see that he or she is causing so much trouble and disturbance for me? Can't she just, or he just, see things my way?
Yeah. We are the wise ones. We have all of this life experience, right? But again, it's the differentiation thing, right? Like the kid is trying to figure it out too. They're trying to gain wisdom, and they're going about it in a way that we disagree with, ergo conflict, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What are some of the other big mistakes that parents make in conflict?
I think even sometimes holding on to one specific issue, and now the everything that your child does is viewed through the lens of this specific incident or stuff like that, right? Where there's no forgiveness in a home, I think is a big thing. Dude, that can take healthy conflict and turn it into unhealthy conflict even too in a discussion, something happens, or even just unhealthy right off the bat, right? But unreconciled disagreement can become very unhealthy. And I think that's a mistake parents just very easily, and I think it comes back to also what you're saying, like the insecurity of the parents, just that frustration. Sometimes it's like, man, I must have really screwed this up, and I can't believe this kid did this. And it, you know, parents start cycling in their own head, and it's hard to confront even some of our own issues, because we're going to make mistakes too as we deal with children too, right? And so if we're unable to own our mistakes and to reconcile, even in the midst conflict, I think sometimes can make issues become bigger too.
Sometimes it's good also to recognize and acknowledge even just the personality aspects to conflict. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's the differing personalities that will get into the greatest conflict, and sometimes it's the same personality types that will get into conflict. So Brad's chuckling because that was kind of part of one of the relationships with one of my teens.
Me though, by the way.
just recognizing that, man, if you give me a hill to die on, I'll die on it. That's where it's going to be. And if both feel the same way, is it really the hill that's worth dying on? Are we willing? Is the relational collateral really worth it for that one? And on some things, in a sense, yes, absolutely. Because again, as Dan was saying, there's right and wrong. It's a moral thing. And maybe there's some other things where we can learn to relax a little bit and give some time and space for them to express their independence and to grow a little bit in their own way, and trust that they'll come around as well. And so, I think just being mindful of our own human factors, even as Brad was saying, that lean into where conflict maybe isn't as necessary as we make it out to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's picking your battles, right?
Mm. Yeah.
It's a classic piece of advice, but I mean, it's true. You don't fight a battle that's, just for the sake of fighting, right? Yeah. You need to have purpose behind it. Otherwise, you lose whether you win or lose. Mm. I think maybe that's another point to make, is just this isn't actually about winning or losing.
Yeah.
We don't want, I don't want to win and my child to lose. Ideally, everybody comes out of this better.
Yeah.
Not, somebody comes out on top. I think one other mistake that parents make is they look at how they were raised themselves and they parent as a reaction to that.
Yep.
Right, where it's like my parents did, like, they were way too hard on me, so I'm just going to kind of like let my child in some ways run wild. And if you haven't sort of had that moment of introspection and thinking like, okay, what actually do I want and what would be best for my child, not through the lens of how was I raised, I think without that introspection, you can fall into a lot of traps without even realize that you're walking into them. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, having gone around the table, we all kind of came up with a conflict. Maybe that has something to do with each of us individually that, we kind of see in ourselves. But also, I think it's important to note that there are a lot of mistakes that parents can make when they are... When they're dealing with conflict. So when we have these moments dealing with conflict, what are some of the actually like positive ways that we can deal with the conflict? I think we might have actually discussed that a little bit as we've been kind of looking at these things, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, can we backtrack slightly
in
terms of mistakes parents make? Another one, maybe fear of what other people will think. What will the grandparents think? What will the uncles and aunts think? What will the neighbors think?
Yeah.
And that somehow becomes much more of a priority than understanding, what's God doing in this situation? Mm-hmm. What is He trying to teach my child and me?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I also want to reiterate your point too of, not looking through, it is good to look back at how we are raised too, but to not parent out of a reaction, like that's so important. Like, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, no, your parents did not raise you perfectly. I'm sitting across the table from my dad. He didn't do everything perfect.
What? I'm so shocked.
But at the same time, for me as an adult to be able to just look back and actually be incredibly thankful for the things he did right and really good. And I'm going to parent differently to a degree than what he did, but I also want to use what I felt was actually good. And even on my wife's side, her parents, they didn't parent her perfectly, but man, they did a lot of good things. And to take those and to actually allow us to be shaped by it, and then go, I think I'm going to do things differently, and that's okay. But yeah, to live out of a reaction it's natural. We do that naturally, but it can be so destructive.
One of the parenting courses that we took when our older kids were young, and also we facilitated with a church parents a couple of different times actually. It's called Growing Kids God's Way. So it's from a few years back, and if you were to be able to find the videos from that, you would think they're fairly corny. However, the principles were invaluable. But one of them principles I think that was so critical was the session that talked about the moral reason why. And I think it even pertains very importantly to this discussion as to how do we parent, especially in the context of conflict. Do we handle conflict just the way that our parents handle it, or the exact opposite, just because we're reacting? Or do we look at the moral reason why? What is it that God actually says? And being willing to dig in. Because honestly, that's actually one of the things that our teens want as well. They want to know why. It's the most annoying question, and maybe the most important question is why.
Yeah,
that's true. I'd like to say one other mistake that parents perhaps make is either they never apologize or they apologize too much. It's very healing within the relationship for a parent to walk away, then come back and tell their teenager, you know, look, I'm sorry, I blew it. Can we pray together?
Yeah. I think, what's some practical advice when dealing with conflict? Let's say we're gonna have two situations, one in which you know there's going to be conflict and one in which you are in the midst of conflict, all right? So if you know that you are going to be in conflict with your kid for whatever reason, what are some of the things that you should do before you bring up whatever the subject is going to be that's going to sort of engage that conflict, whether it's, you know, something in the house was broken or they were out after curfew and it's the next morning, you know, like what are some of the things that you should do in advance of coming into this conflict?
That's a really good question. I think first off, find mutual ground, right? Where's a location even where your child doesn't automatically feel on the defensive? Hey, let's go out for dinner, or hey, let's go downtown, let's go grab a snack, let's go to the convenience store, or whatever. Find a mutual place to actually just handle, and they know conflict's coming too. Usually, right? They're waiting for it, and. Yeah. Sometimes the waiting is...
That's the punishment itself,
too. Sometimes I've been sent to my room enough, and that was never a fun thing. but
I do remember one occasion where the ping pong table was the opportunity that Brad and I chatted when he was about 16 years old. And so, yeah, the principle is amazing, finding that neutral place that where it's not automatically... this overlording situation, but this, you know, as relaxed as possible, but yet as clear as possible.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I haven't always practiced what I'm going to say now, but I found it very helpful to, and ideally this is something that we would have modeled to our children from the beginning. If not, it's never too late, but to say, okay, why don't we each take a little bit of time to go to our rooms separately and pray, and then let's come back and talk about this. And you know, there are going to be different reactions. Sometimes they may roll their eyes, they may not, but I think that we are setting in place something that's so crucial that...
it's almost like setting a framework around it.
Yes.
Yeah. And if there's a great deal of emotional charge still in one or the other, it's probably not going to be a very productive conversation.
Yeah. I think in the same vein as finding a neutral place, I think finding a neutral time as well is important too, right? Because if, for example, we go with the curfew thing, right, it might be that, you know, you've woken up at 6 a.m, you've done your Bible reading, you've had a shower, you've had breakfast, and, you know, it's 8:30 a.m, and your kid gets up and it's like, okay, now's the time. And they're still groggy. And you're like, you're just coming at them right out the gate as far as they're concerned. Right. So finding that neutral time as well to have these sorts of conversations. So let's say that you're in the midst of conflict then, right? You're having this conversation. It's not going well. what do you do to try to turn that around?
Oh, I mean, I think even what Dan said earlier too is to just go, hey, we're not getting anywhere right now. Like, both of us are mad. All we're doing is making each other more mad. We need to finish this conversation. We're taking a break for now. You know, set a time. Like, let's come back and talk about this in an hour, 1 hour. You know, it's whatever time. We need to finish this conversation after. And then another thing, even on that point, to just do is, where do you want to meet? Do you want to meet in your room, or do you want to go for a drive? Right, and to give them a bit of an option in that too, to give, hey, you're a valid part of this, and you get some even choice as to where we're going to meet in an hour. So I'm going to set a precedent. We need to take a break. We are taking a break, and it's for this long. But where would you want to really engage the conversation? I think can help just reset everything, where that part of it at least ended with some collaboration, even though in great strife, there was still some collaboration there.
Yeah, and if you can't get that collaboration in the moment, it's okay for that to wait as well. Yeah. Until that time is up, right?
Yeah.
Like, all right, we gotta get back into this, but okay. You know, where would you like to have this conversation?
Yeah, and it might even be like, okay, if you don't know where you want it now, we're gonna take a break for an hour. At the end of that hour, make a decision in that hour where you want to meet. I'll come find you in an hour. Let me know where you want to meet, right? And so even give them some time and space to actually just think about it and just say, hey, just let me know, but we got to re-engage this later. Let's calm down.
And perhaps also recognizing that quite often it's our kids watching. The issue, it's the presenting issue may not be the most important thing. They're also watching to see how we handle the situation. And we got to also remember that they are experts at knowing how to keep irritating us without detonating us.
Right.
And just keeping that in mind also. And
yeah, absolutely. We talked about the idea of them understanding themselves exclusively as a member of the family, especially in early years. Mm-hmm. It also means that they're kind of an expert in that field as well. It's yes. All that they know, and they know exactly how to push buttons yes. within the family, right? Because they have been studying it for yes. the past 15 years or however long.
Their lives.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. Whereas us, you know, this family is a fairly new thing. It might have only been half of our life so far, right? Or even less than that. So how... Let's say that the relationship has been fairly broken already. How would we go about sort of re-engaging these relationships?
I think a really important way to re-engage a relationship is what we've kind of touched on already, is being willing to own our own faults in it, to sit down and just say, hey, I'm sorry, I messed this up here. In this conversation, I actually sinned against you in this way or whatever it is. And actually just being able to take ownership of our own faults even in the relationship as a whole, maybe not even just about that issue, right? As we're trying to rebuild a relationship that's been broken, I think it's super important that we as the parent can own our own sin. And another really important part is that we stop holding things, and we touched on this a little bit too earlier, we don't hold things against our children, so that when there's moments of, you know, we're not dealing with a conflict necessarily. If there's this kind of cloud of resentment in the home because of different issues that aren't dealt with, we're not going to get anywhere in the home. Like, that's not going to rebuild a relationship. If your child feels like being in your presence is a cloud, and you probably, the reason you're going to feel that same way too sometimes, like just being around them is just hard. There's just this dark cloud. We have to be a part of just breaking through that and to actually just be able to smile and just, you know, say something funny. I don't know, like, but just have good relationship. Even if there's conflict that's not resolved, to be very intentional about trying to have good relationship in moments that we can. But if there's just this cloud of resentment, we're not going to get anywhere.
I think there's a couple other aspects that we can approach in that too. And I really appreciate what you said there, Brad. When conflict is just seems constant, I think one of the things that needs to be sought out is some moment or moments of non-conflict to have conversations. Mm-hmm. Not to create a conflict in those times, but if you try to deal with issues in conflict, in the time of conflict, you really don't get anywhere. But taking times to that are not conflict times to just have conversations. There's another business or leadership principle that I've come across that I think can be really helpful in the process of going from a context of high conflict to hopefully not high conflict or even a sense of peace in the home. And the starting point actually is to do a real honest evaluation of the current reality. Do that individually, you and God, your Bible open. What is our current reality? What is it that we're dealing with here? Write some things down, journal, maybe even over a little period of time to just journal. What are you actually experiencing? What is the actual reality of our current situation? Do that with your spouse. What are we actually dealing with here? What is this moment that we're in? Because our hopes are for everything to be as they should be. But if we're not honest with the current reality, we might not be honest with the path that it's going to take to get to the other aspect of this, which is the desired future. So if you have a clarity about what the current reality is, the next clarity you need is, what is the desired future? And if this can be even a part of those non-conflict conversations, hey, what do you want out of this relationship? What would you actually like this to look like? And do an assessment with your young person, with your teenager, of the current reality. Lord willing, they're willing to do that. And of their desired future. You know, I've even heard it said, you know, if your teenager doesn't really want to be around you, pay them to go out for coffee with you. Now, that might seem a little bit strange, but if your current reality is so broken that there's just no together time, then say, hey, you know what? I'll pay you $20 if we can go out for coffee for an hour. And they might be a little shocked, and it might seem counterintuitive in one sense, but man, if you can get 1 hour of non-conflict time to just, you know what, maybe that hour is even silent for the first time, but you're together, and it can begin to break down some of those walls. So then the two other things, you position yourself to understand your current reality and your desired future, but what it's going to take between those two things is strategic intent. And so again, back to even what Dan said early on in this conversation about really knowing God, knowing and listening to his voice, having strategic intent according to God's way of doing things. And the other one is courage. You're not going to get from point A to point B or current reality to desired future without a great deal of courage. It's not going to be an easy path. And when conflict has been at the level that we've seen in some of the homes of young people that come to our program, in many cases, unfortunately, hope has been lost. And so one of our projects with the families is to reinstill that there is hope for a better desired future. But you know what? It's going to take a great deal of courage. And trust in God along the way.
Mm-hmm. So I think you made an important, you made a number of important notes in there, but one that kind of stuck out to me was the spouse. So we've talked about the idea that there is, in relationships, there's going to be conflict. So like, assuming there is a spouse in the picture, how do mom and dad kind of play a role in displaying how we resolve conflict with each other?
If you haven't listened to our first episode, it'd be great to go back and listen to that, because one of the concepts that we talk about there is role modeling, and it's role modeling some really basic life principles like maturity, responsibility, and charity, honesty, respect, and obedience. And again, when you do an assessment of your current reality, how are you doing in that? Do I display maturity and responsibility and charity? Is the room that I walk in generally better because I've walked into that room? Am I displaying what I expect from my teenager in regards to some of those basic character qualities of honesty, respect, and obedience? I might be demanding respect from my teenager because I'm the parent, but am I living in such a way that would garner that respect? Some other maybe principles that we work with here in our organization, as far as just basic employment expectations, we talk about the four C's: character, competence, chemistry, and commitment. And when we think about those principles in relation to parents working things out between themselves, even as an example to the teenagers, character, do we have those character qualities again that I was just mentioning? When it comes to this word competence, are we striving to do our parenting well? Are we willing to learn along the way? And honestly, I found in all the years of working with parents, it's the thing that is the greatest hit on our pride, is that our kids are a reflection of our parenting. And if it hasn't gone well, we feel destroyed by that. But are we willing to just look into competency aspects? And so if you're listening to this podcast, there's a good chance that you're willing to learn and grow in that. This word chemistry, how do I get along with people in general? Am I a person that is desired to be in the room? Whether that's in my home, whether that's in my church, in my workplace, in the community at large. And then the fourth one being commitment. Do our kids see the commitment that we have to one another as parents? And that would be a foundational stabilizer in our home and even with our teen. Is their world in upheaval because our relationship as parents, as husband and wife, is in upheaval? And so I think that it's really critical that we role model those aspects to our teens and allow that to be the foundation of the conflict work that we need to do with our teens.
To finish off here, we've been weaving kind of scriptural concepts throughout this, maybe getting, I'll take the blame for this, a little too philosophical at points, but in what ways is the gospel message tied into conflict and probably more critically, conflict resolution?
I think if we even just examine ourselves before God, right? Like, we fall so short on a daily basis. The Bible's very clear, like, all of sin and fallen short of the glory of God, right? But yet, especially as for us as Christians, like, to look and just go, man, God never gave up on me, and he should have, but he didn't. He consistently pursued me. Even when I was running as fast as I could away from him, living in sin, knowingly living in sin, he pursued me, and he pursued relationship. We see that throughout the Old Testament, the people of Israel, constantly, time and time again, God would rescue them. They'd serve him, have good relationship with him, and then they just run off with the next nation and start worshiping their gods, fall away, totally disown God. And he just over and over and over, God constantly drew back his people to himself and pursued relationship with them. And I think that's just the state of all of us. Like, we're all there. We've all been in conflict with our God, our maker. And we can look and go, man, God pursued me and I just have a great relationship with him. And I was hopeless. And on my standards, but God made a way. And so I think in the same, he's going to use the conflict that we have with our children to display his love for us people to reconcile with one another.
And building on that, what Brad just said, the fact that we can cast all our cares on him, because he cares for us. We've sort of looked at this as kind of the parent and the child in conflict. And it's so important to realize that both parents and both the parent and the child also have other relationships that are feeding into that particular relationship. So if a child is being bullied in school or has issues in their friend group, that's going to feed into the relationship with the parent. And there may be a lot of anger. And that anger may have actually hardly anything to do with the parent-child relationship, but it's going to flow into that relationship. So I guess, again, modeling from wherever we start, that we can cast all our cares on God. He cares for us. He cares for even those little details.
Yeah, I really appreciate what both of you just said in that regard. And I think along that same line is, you know, I used the term earlier that teenagers are looking to find their independence from their parents. And ultimately, yeah, we're not looking for them to be dependent on us. But the project with our kids and our teenagers is not for them ultimately to be independent, but for their dependence to shift, to transfer from their parents, us, to God. And that's also the beauty of the gospel, is that this God who we can cast all our cares on him because he cares for us, we can depend on him. We can transfer that parental dependence we had on our parents to our heavenly parent, our God and heavenly Father, that we can depend on throughout our lives. And so, I think it's a wonderful opportunity that we have to both role model and display our dependence on God as we encourage our teenagers to find that that dependence on God themselves.
That'll wrap it up for us today. The Rock Solid Roundtable is created by Rock Solid Refuge, a Christian nonprofit dedicated to restoring adolescent lives and ministering to their families. If you want to support Rock Solid Refuge, visit our website at www.rocksolidrefuge.com. And we want to hear from you as well. Send any questions or recommendations for the panel to partners@rocksolidrefuge.com. And please share this program with friends, family, and clergy. Let them know that we are out here. So on behalf of Brad, Dan, and Dallas, my name is Paul. Thank you for joining us, and we hope to see you soon.